Cavalcade of Kings. Charles the First, Part One. The cavalcade of kings rides on. James the First has passed, and his son Charles now approaches. Charles the First of England was born at Dunfermline on the 19th of November, 1600. He was a sickly child, unable to speak till his fifth year. Later, he outgrew his defects and became skilled in tilting and marksmanship, as well as an accomplished scholar and a diligent student of theology. He was created Duke of Albany at his baptism, Duke of York in 1605, and Prince of Wales in 1616, 4 years after the death of his brother, Prince Henry, who left him heir to the crown of three kingdoms. Later, he became betrothed to Princess Henrietta Maria, the sister of the French king. On March the 27th, 1625, Charles succeeded his father, James I, to the throne. Some weeks later, we find the young king awaiting the arrival of the Duke of Buckingham, his late father's favorite, who was the most cordially hated man in England.
Your pleasure, sire.
My good Buckingham, it is now 6 weeks since I wed by proxy the beautiful Princess Henrietta Maria. 6 weeks, mark ye, Buckingham, and as yet I have not so much as kissed the hand of my wife.
Oh, such a condition is not to be borne, sire.
Indeed, it is not. That is why I am sending you to France, to attend Her Majesty and escort her safely to England.
Oh, that will I gladly do, sire. To be the special envoy of Cupid pleases me mightily.
On your way, Buckingham, and see to it that ye linger not at the French court.
It will be difficult to tear myself away, sire. For the most beautiful flowers in Europe, they tell me, blossom at the French court.
Wantons, every one of them, whose white arms and red lips are but traps to ensnare romantic fools such as you, my friend.
Ah, but how sweet a fate, sire, to fall into the trap of a woman's arms.
Ah, fall into her arms as often as it pleases ye, but never fall into her hands. Why don't you take a wife and then put an end to all your philandering?
Oh, my artistic soul shrinks from such dull monotony, sire.
You are as fickle as the wind. Hey, but mark me, the fish that is soon caught that nibbles at every bait.
Maybe thou art right, sire. But what matters the hook if the bait be sweet?
I can see thee, Buckingham, dangling on the end of a line, a fish in velvet breeches and plumed hat.
If such a sorry fate should o'ertake me, sire, I trust that you will unhook me and throw me back into my particular pool.
Not I. I'll assist the fair angler to cook you in the matrimonial pot. And now, get ye gone, my friend. And remember, you are on the king's service, which brooks no delay. Return to England with Her Majesty by June the 13th. I shall await you at Dover.
Charles, my beloved husband.
Henrietta, at last. Oh, what a joy it is to see your sweet face again.
I still meet you somewhat ravaged by the severity of the crossing. The seas were mountainous, the wind a raging gale. I thought every moment would be my last. And in truth, my courage would have failed me had it not been for the presence of my Lord Duke of Buckingham.
Her Majesty is as gracious as she is beautiful. If her humble servant might be permitted to say so.
Oh, my Lord Duke can say the most charming things and the most outrageous with equal grace.
Come, my sweet. Our coach stands waiting to carry us to London, where you are to be crowned Queen Consort of England.
The English people at first took Queen Henrietta to their hearts, but she held the Protestant religion in great dislike and brought over a huge retinue comprising a bishop and 29 priests with 410 male and female retainers whom the king permitted to worship freely in the Catholic faith. This stirred up strife and made the people hostile towards the queen. And in addition to this, the king's friendship with Buckingham prevented him from being trusted by his subjects. At the moment, Sir Thomas Wentworth, who'd sat in Parliament for a long time and now had gone over to the side of the people, is remonstrating with the young king.
Mm-hmm. Your Majesty is surely not surprised that Parliament refuses to grant money for a war with Spain when they know full well that the crazy idea emanated from the brain of my Lord Duke of Buckingham.
Well, they'd better make haste and let me have money, or it will be the worse for them.
Sire, what use to carry on hostilities with Spain? Hast forgotten the miserable failure of our expedition to Cadiz?
A failure that could be turned into a great and glorious success if only the pig-headed clogs in Parliament had the wit to listen to my new plans.
Parliament is against Buckingham to a man, for he is the cause of many great public grievances and wrongs. And until you rid yourself of the parasite, you will never have the full confidence of your ministers. There is another matter, sire, which is causing grave disruption.
Oh, speak on. Let me have the full content of your words. If faith was ever a man more plagued than I.
Sire, I am but the mouthpiece of the people and crave your indulgence.
Speak on.
Sire, the people are bitterly incensed over the marriage articles which pledge you, in violation of solemn vows to Parliament, to permit the Queen and all her retainers the free exercise of the Catholic religion, and to give her the upbringing of your children until they reach the age of 13 years.
An arrangement which apparently does not find favor in the eyes of Sir Thomas Wentworth.
Your Majesty, my business is with the King.
No, good sir. Your business is with the Queen, the potential mother of the King's heirs. State the reason why you object to our children when they are born, being brought up by their mother.
Your Majesty asks the truth.
I demand it, sir.
Then I shall speak it. Parliament and the people both object to the heirs to the throne of England being brought up in the Roman Catholic faith. They also object to the haughty insolence of your Majesty's priests and retainers, who are forever stirring up strife and bitterness amongst the people. And your Majesty would do well for the future peace of the King's subjects to send her troublesome servants back to France. It will be a more comfortable condition for them than a prison in the Tower or the executioner's block.
The King dissolved Parliament, and to raise money, levied certain duties called tonnage and poundage. He also called upon seaport towns to furnish and to pay all the cost of a fleet of armed ships. A new Parliament was called, who was strong enough to fight for the rights of the people. They laid before His Majesty one of the great documents of history, known as the Petition of Right. Later, Buckingham, to gratify his wounded vanity, involved England in a war with France, as well as Spain. We now find Buckingham bidding farewell to King Charles prior to setting out for Portsmouth, where the Duke was to take command of the fleet.
I was forced to sign the accursed petition of right, Buckingham, in order to get money to send this expedition to the relief of La Rochelle. Its fate is in your hands, my friend.
I shall not fail you, sire. Now I must be on my way. Colonel Fryer awaits me in Portsmouth.
Godspeed and good fortune attend you, my friend.
You are on time, good Buckingham.
Aye, Colonel. I rode hard and long.
Tis well. The fleet is ready to sail with the tide. We but waited your arrival.
And now that I have satisfied my hunger and rested my tired bones, we had better proceed to our ships.
Night is dark outside. We're here, Buckingham. I'll go inside and summon the servants to bring a lantern to light us to the jetty.
Hey there! A lantern!
My Lord Duke of Buckingham will have no need of a lantern where he is going.
Who are you, fellow, and what seek you?
Your cursed life! Take this!
Ah! Oh! Help! Help! In God's name, I'm stabbed! Help!
What has happened? Buckingham! Quick, don't turn the lantern this way! Mother of God, he's been stabbed through the heart! The knife is still in the wound! Quickly, search the house on the grounds. The assassin cannot have got far away.
I am the man.
Seize him. He shall be taken before the king to answer for his dastardly crime.
You say Buckingham was murdered?
Yes, sire. His assassin struck him down outside the door of my house in Portsmouth.
Where is the ruffian?
He is in chains, sire, in the guardhouse.
Summon my counselors and have the monster brought before me.
At once, sire.
Buckingham dead? Oh, my dear, dear friend, against whom every man's hand was turned for no other reason than you were the king's man, his loyal and trusted friend and servant.
His Majesty's counselors await the king's pleasure.
My lord, I have summoned ye to examine John Felton, who stands self-accused of the brutal murder of my lord Duke of Buckingham. Bring the prisoner before me.
Here is the man, sir.
What is your name, fellow?
John Felton, your majesty. I'm a Protestant and retired officer of the army.
What did you hate in Buckingham that made you take his life?
I had no personal hatred of the man, sir.
Oh, Powell has happened to kill a man in cold blood.
I suggest we put him to the rack, sir, in order to learn the name of his accomplice.
I had no accomplice.
The rack might bring forth one.
Yea, good Marquis. I might even call out thy name in my agony.
Why did you murder him? Why did you take from me my best friend?
Because Buckingham was a curse to the country. I watched him enter the house of Colonel Fryer. Sometime later, he came out of the front door and stood waiting alone in the darkness. That was my opportunity. I sprang at him and plunged my knife up to its hilt into the black, lying heart of the most profligate, contemptible and base creature the Court of England has ever produced. It was a blow struck in defense of the security of the people. I am glad I had the strength to do it. Take me, break me, do what you will with me. I am content to die, knowing I have rid the land of its foulest enemies.